anything, I feared the patients were beginning to rub off on her. One patient in particular, a Monsieur Bernal, worried me. A few days ago, Father Orville had pulled me aside to inform me the man was kept under constant sedation and chained to prevent suicide. Father Orville seemed to think Lou would suffer a shock when the inevitable happened. Perhaps time away would do us both good. I set aside my Bible.
Where do you want to go?
I want a sticky bun. Do you remember the patisserie where we first met? The one in East End? I used to go there all the time before, well, all of this. She waved a hand between us.
I eyed her warily. Do you promise to behave yourself?
Of course not. That would ruin the fun. She hopped down from the bed, fetched her cloak from the rack. Are you coming or not? A sparkle lit her eyes that I hadn't seen since the theater. Before the burning, before, well, all of this. I eyed her carefully, searching for any sign of the woman I'd known in the past week. Though her fever had abated quickly, her spirits hadn't. It had been like she was balancing on the tip of a knife, one wrong move, and she'd impale someone. Likely me.
Or herself.
But today seemed different. Perhaps she turned a corner.
Are you feeling better?
I asked, hesitant. She stilled in tying her cloak. Maybe.
Against my better judgment, I nodded and reached for my own coat, only to have her snatch it out of reach.
No! She wagged a finger in front of my nose. I'd like to spend the day with Reed, not the chasseur.
Reed.
I still hadn't grown used to her saying my name. Every time she did, an absurd little thrill shot through me. This time was no different. I cleared my throat and crossed my arms, trying and failing to remain impassive.
They're the same person.
She grimaced and held the door open for me. We'll see about that, shall we? It was a blustery day, icy, unforgiving. Bits of the last snowfall clung to the edge of the streets where footsteps had turned it slushy and brown. I stuffed my hands into my trouser pockets, blinked irritably into the brilliant afternoon sunshine. It's freezing out here. Lou turned her face into the wind with a grin, closed her eyes, and extended her arms, the tip of her nose already red. The cold stifles the reek of fish. It's wonderful.
It's easy for you to say. You have a cloak.
She turned to me, grin widening. Pieces of her hair tore free of her hood and danced around her face. I can swipe you one if you'd like. There's a clothier next door to the patisserie.
Don't even think about it.
Fine.
She burrowed deeper into the folds of her cloak. Charcoal, stained, fraying at the hem.
Suit yourself.
Scowling, I trudged down the street after her, every muscle in my body seized with cold, but I didn't allow myself to shiver, to give Lou the satisfaction of,
"Oh, good Lord," she said, laughing. "This is painful to watch. Here."
She threw one side of her cloak around me. It barely covered my shoulders, but I didn't complain, especially when she nestled beneath my arm, drawing it tighter around us. I wrapped my arm around her shoulders in surprise. She laughed harder.
We look ridiculous.
I glanced down at us, lips quirking. It was true. I was simply too big for the fabric, and we were forced to shuffle awkwardly in order to stay covered. We tried to synchronize our steps, but I soon stepped wrong, and we ended up in a tangled heap in the snow, a spectacle. Passers-by eyed us in disapproval, but for the first time in as long as I could remember, I didn't care. I laughed, too. By the time we burst into the patisserie, our cheeks and noses were red. Our throats ached from laughter. I stared at her as she swept the cloak from my shoulders. She smiled with her whole face. I'd never seen such a transformation. It was infectious.
Pan!
Lou flung her arms open. I followed her gaze to the familiar man behind the counter, short, heavy set, bright, beady eyes that lit with excitement upon seeing Lou.
Lucida, my darling child, where have you been?
He waddled around the counter as fast as his legs would carry him.
I was beginning to think you had forgotten your friend Pan, and,
his eyes widened comically and his voice dropped to a whisper,
What have you done to your hair?
Lou's smile slipped, and her hand shot to her hair. Oblivious, Pan swept her into his arms, holding her a second longer than appropriate. Lou gave a reluctant chuckle. I needed a change. Something darker for winter. Do you like it?
Of course, of course. But you're much too thin, child. Much too thin. Here, let us fatten you up with a bun.
He turned back toward the counter, but halted when he finally noticed me. He raised his brows.
And who is this?
Lou grinned, devious. I braced myself for whatever scheme she'd concocted, praying it wasn't something illegal, knowing it probably was. Pan, she took my arm and tugged me forward. I'd like you to meet Boz.
Boz?
I looked down at her in surprise.
The Boz?
Pan's eyes nearly popped out of his head. She winked at me. The one and only. Pan scowled. Then, incredibly, he rose to his toes and poked a finger in my chest. I frowned, bewildered, and made to step back, but the man followed, poking me all the way.
Now, you listen to me, young man. Yes, I've heard all about you. You don't know how lucky you are to have this chérie on your arm. She is a pearl, and you will treat her as such from this point on, do you understand? If I hear differently, you will answer to me, and you do not want Pan as an enemy. Oh, no!
I glared at Lou, indignant, but she only shook with silent laughter. Useless. I took a quick step backward, too quick for the man to follow.
Yes, sir.
Very good.
He still eyed me shrewdly as he fetched two sticky buns from behind the counter. After handing one to Lou, he promptly threw the other in my face. I hastened to stop it from sliding down my shirt.
Here you are, my dear. You have to pay, he added, glaring at me.
I wiped icing from my nose incredulously. The man was a lunatic, as was my wife. When Pan retreated back behind the counter, I rounded on her.
Who is Lucida? And why did you tell him my name is that?
It took her several seconds to answer, to chew through the enormous glob of sticky bun in her mouth. Her cheeks bulged with it. To her credit, she managed to keep her mouth closed. To my credit, I did too. She finally swallowed, licked her fingers with a reverence that belonged in mass. No, with a reverence that most definitely did not belong in mass. I looked anywhere but at her tongue.
So territorial, Shaz.
Well?
I asked, unable to conceal my jealousy. Why would you tell him I'm the thief? She grinned at me and continued licking her thumb.
If you must know, I use him to guilt Pan into giving me sweets. Just last month, the wicked, wicked Boz tricked me into elopement, only to leave me at the dock. Pan gave me free buns for a week.
I forced myself to meet her eyes.
You're deplorable.
Her eyes glittered. She knew exactly what she was doing.
Yes, I am. Are you going to eat that?
She motioned to my plate. I shoved it toward her, and she bit into my bun with a soft sigh.
Like manna from heaven.
Surprise jolted through me. I didn't realize you were familiar with the Bible.
You probably don't realize a lot of things about me, Chaz.
She shrugged, stuffing half the bun into her mouth.
Besides, it's the only book in the entire tower except La Vie Ephemère, Shepherd, and 12 Treatises of Occult Extermination, which is rubbish, by the way, I don't recommend.
I hardly heard a word she said.
Don't call me that. My name is Reed.
She arched a brow. I thought they were the same person. I leaned back, studying her as she finished my bun. A bit of icing covered her lip. Her nose was still red from the cold, her hair wild and windblown. My little heathen.
You dislike the Chasseurs.
She fixed me with a pointed stare.
And I tried so hard to hide it.
I ignored her.
Why?
I don't think you're ready to hear that answer, Chas.
Fine. Why did you want to come out today?
Because it was time.
I suppressed a sigh of frustration.
Meaning?
Meaning there's a time for mourning, and there's a time for moving on.
It was always the same with her. She always hedged, as if sensing my thoughts, she crossed her arms, leaning onto the table, expression inscrutable.
All right, then. Maybe you are ready to hear some answers. Let's make a game of it, shall we? A game of questions to get to know each other.
I leaned forward, too, returning the challenge.
Let's.
Fine.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
She rolled her eyes.
Boring. Mine's gold, or turquoise, or emerald.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Because you aren't as stupid as you look.
I didn't know whether to be insulted or flattered.
She didn't give me time to decide. What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done?
Blood crept up my throat at the memory. I coughed and stared at her empty plate.
The Archbishop once caught me in a compromising position with a girl.
Oh, my God! She smacked her palms against the table, eyes widening. You got caught having sex with Seely?
The people at the next table swiveled to stare at us. I ducked my head, thankful for the first time ever I wasn't wearing my uniform. I glared at her.
Shh, of course not. She kissed me, okay? It was just kissing.
Lou frowned. Just kissing? That's no fun at all. Hardly something to be embarrassed about.
But it had been something to be embarrassed about. The look on the Archbishop's face. I forced the memory away quickly.
What's yours, then? Did you strip naked and dance the burée?
She snorted. You wish. No. I sang at a festival when I was a child. Missed every note. Everyone laughed. I'm a shit singer.
Our neighbors tisked in disapproval. I grimaced.
Yes, I know.
Biggest pet peeve?
Swearing.
Killjoys, she grinned. Favorite food?
Venison.
She pointed to her empty plate. Sticky buns. Best friend?
Jean-Luc, you?
Really?
Her grin faded, and she stared at me with what looked like pity. But that couldn't be right.
That's unfortunate.
Mine is Brie. Ignoring the jab, the look. I interrupted before she could ask another question.
Fatal flaw?
She hesitated, dropping her gaze to the tabletop, tracing a knot in the wood with her finger.
Selfishness.
Wrath. Greatest fear?
This time she didn't hesitate. Death. I frowned and reached across the table to grasp her hand.
There's nothing to fear in death, Lou.
She looked up at me, blue-green eyes inscrutable.
There isn't?
No. Not if you know where you're going.
She gave a grim laugh and dropped my hand.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Lou.
She stood and thrust a finger against my mouth to silence me. I blinked rapidly, trying not to fixate on the sweetness of her skin.
Let's not talk about this anymore.
She dropped her finger.
Let's go see the Yule tree. I saw them putting it up earlier.
The Christmas tree.
I corrected automatically. She continued as if she hadn't heard me. We really ought to get you a coat first, though.
Are you sure you don't want me to steal one? It would be easy. I'll even let you pick the color.
I'm not going to let you steal anything. I'll buy a coat.
I accepted the bit of cloak she offered me, pulling it around us once more.
And I can buy you a new cloak as well.
Baz bought this for me.
Exactly.
I steered her down the street toward the clothier's shop.
All the more reason to throw it in the trash where it belongs.
An hour later, we emerged from the shop in our new garments. A navy wool coat with silver fastenings for me. A white cloak of crushed velvet for Lou. She'd protested when she saw the price, but I'd insisted. The white looked striking against her golden skin, and she'd left her hood down for once. Her dark hair blew loose in the breeze.
Beautiful.
I hadn't mentioned that. Last bit, though.
A dove cooed above us as we made our way to the village center, and snowflakes fell thick and fast.
They caught in Lou's hair, in her eyelashes. She winked at me, catching one on her tongue, then another and another. Soon she twirled in a circle, trying to catch them all at once. People stared, but she didn't care. I watched her with reluctant amusement.
Come on, Shaz, taste them. They're divine.
I shook my head, a grin tugging at my lips. The more people who muttered around us, the louder her voice became, the wilder her movements, the broader her smile. She reveled in their disapproval. I shook my head, grin fading.
I can't.
She spun toward me and grabbed my hands. Her fingers were freezing like 10 tiny icicles. It won't kill you to live a little, you know?
I'm a chasseur, Lou.
I spun her away from me once more with a pang of regret. We don't
frolic.
Even if we wanted to. Have you ever tried it?
Of course not.
Maybe you should. It's getting late. Do you want to see the Christmas tree or not? She stuck her tongue out at me. You're no fun, Chas. A frolic in the snow might be just what you and the rest of those chasseurs need. It's a good way to get the stick out of your ass, I'm told. I glanced around nervously. Two passing shoppers skewered me with disapproving glares. I caught Lou's hand as she spun back toward me. Please behave. Fine. She reached up to brush the snowflakes from my hair, smoothing the furrow between my brows as she went. I will refrain from using the word ass. Happy?
Lou.
She cackled and grinned up at me. You, sir, are too easy. Let's go see this Yule tree.
Christmas tree.
Nuance, shall we? Though we no longer shared a cloak, she wrapped her arms around my waist. Pulling her closer with an exasperated shake of my head, I couldn't stop the small smile that touched my lips. Mademoiselle Perrault greeted us in the church foyer that evening, her face pinched, troubled. She ignored me, as per usual, and walked straight to Lou. What is it? Lou frowned and took her gloved hands. What's happened?
It's Bernie,
Mademoiselle Perrault said quietly. Lou's brows dipped as she scanned Mademoiselle Perrault's face. I clasped Lou's shoulder. Who's Bernie? Mademoiselle Perrault didn't even glance at me, but Lou did.
Monsieur Bernal.
The suicidal patient. She turned her attention back to Mademoiselle Perrault.
Is he dead?
Mademoiselle Perrault's eyes gleamed too bright in the candlelight of the foyer, too wet, lined with unshed tears. I braced myself for the inevitable.
We don't know. He's gone.
This caught my attention. I stepped forward. What do you mean, gone? She exhaled sharply through her nose, finally deigning to look at me.
Gone as in gone, Captain Diggory. Bed empty, chains torn free, no sign of a body.
No sign of a body? Lou's eyes widened. So, that means he didn't die by suicide.
Mademoiselle Perrault shook her head, grim. It doesn't mean anything. He could have dragged himself off somewhere and done it. Until we find the body, we don't know.
I had to agree with her. Have my brethren been alerted? She pursed her lips.
Yes. They're searching the church and tower now. A unit has been deployed to scour the city as well.
Good. The last thing we needed was someone stumbling upon a corpse riddled with magic. The people would panic. I nodded and squeezed Lou's shoulder. They'll find him, Lou. One way or the other, you needn't worry.
Her face remained rigid. But what if he's dead?
I spun her around to face me, much to Mademoiselle Perrault's irritation.
Then he's no longer in pain.
I leaned down to her ear, away from Mademoiselle Perrault's keen eyes. Her hair tickled my lips.
He knew where he was going, Lou.
He had nothing to fear.
She leaned back to look at me. I thought suicide was a mortal sin. I reached out, brushing a strand of hair behind her ear.
Only God can judge us. Only God can read the depths of our soul. And I think he understands the power of circumstance, of fear.
I dropped my hand and cleared my throat, forced the words out before I could change my mind.
I think there are few absolutes in this world. Just because the church believes Monsieur Bernard will suffer eternally for his mental illness, doesn't mean he will.
Something swelled in Lou's eyes at my words. I didn't recognize it at first, didn't recognize it until several hours later as I drifted to sleep on my bedroom floor. Hope. It had been hope.
The Guest of Honor, Lou. King August scheduled a ball on the eve of St. Nicholas Day to commence a weekend of celebration, and to honor Reed. Apparently, the king felt indebted to Reed for saving his family's skin when the witches had attacked. Though I hadn't stuck around to watch the chaos unfold, I had no doubt my husband had acted heroic. Still, it felt odd celebrating Reed's victory when his failure would have solved my predicament. If the king and his children were already dead, there would be no reason for me to die too. Indeed, my throat would have very much appreciated his failure. Reed shook his head in exasperation as Coco burst into the room without knocking, a filmy white gown draped across her arm. Slinging his best chasseur coat over his shoulder and sighing, he bent to tuck a piece of my hair behind my ear in farewell.
"I need to meet the Archbishop."
He paused at the door, the corner of his mouth quirking in a lopsided smile. Excitement danced in his sea-blue eyes. Despite my reservations, I couldn't help myself. I smiled back.
"I'll return shortly."
Coco lifted the gown for my appraisal after he left. "You're going to look divine in this."
"I look divine in everything."
She grinned and winked at me. "That's the spirit." Tossing the gown on the bed, she forced me into the desk chair, raking her fingers through my hair. I shivered at the memory of Reed's fingers. "The priests agreed to let me attend the ball, since I'm such a close, personal friend of you and your husband." She pulled a brush from her robes with a determined glint in her eyes. "Now, it's time to brush your hair." I scowled at her and leaned away. "I don't think so." I never brushed my hair. It was one of the few rules I lived by, and I certainly didn't see a need to start breaking it now. Besides, Reed liked my hair. Since I'd asked him to braid it, he seemed to think he could continue touching it at every opportunity. I didn't correct him because, well, I just didn't. "Oh, but I do." She pushed me back down in my seat, attacking my hair as if it had personally offended her. When I tried to wriggle away, she whacked me on top of the head with her brush. "Be still! These rats have to come out." Nearly 2 hours later, I stared at myself in the mirror. The front of the gown, crafted of thin white silk, skimmed my torso before billowing artfully at the knees, soft and simple. Delicate petals and silver crystals dusted the sheer fabric of the back, and Coco had pinned my hair at my nape to showcase the elaborate appliqué. She'd also insisted I heal the remainder of my bruises. Another velvet ribbon covered my scar. Overall, I looked good. She stood behind me now, preening at her own reflection over my shoulder. A fitted black gown accentuated her every curve, the high neckline and tight sleeves adding to her allure, and she'd pinned her wayward curls into an elegant chignon at her crown. I eyed her with a familiar pang of jealousy. I didn't fill out my own dress quite so well. She smoothed the rouge on her lips with a finger and smacked her lips. "We look straight out of the Belle Rose. Babette would be proud." "Is that supposed to be an insult?" I reached into my gown to lift each breast, squeezing my shoulders together and frowning at the results. "Those courtesans are so beautiful, people pay to be with them." Ansel entered the bedroom a moment later. He trimmed his mop of curls and smoothed them away from his face, emphasizing his high cheekbones and flawless skin. The new style made him look older. I eyed the long lines of his body, the sharp cut of his jaw, the full curve of his mouth, with newfound appreciation. His eyes boggled at the sight of Coco. I didn't blame him. Her gown was a far cry from the oversized healing robe she normally wore.
"Mademoiselle Perrault, you look very, very good."
Her brows rose in wry amusement. He shook his head quickly and tried again.
"Reed, or Captain Diggory, he wanted me to tell you, I mean not you, but Lou, that,
good Lord, Ansel." I grinned as he tore his gaze from her. He blinked rapidly, dazed, as if someone had clubbed him in the head.
"I feel a little insulted."
But he clearly wasn't listening. His eyes had already gravitated back to Coco, who stalked toward him with a cat-like grin. She tilted her head as if surveying a particularly juicy mouse. He swallowed hard. "You look very good as well." She circled him appreciatively, trailing a finger across his chest. He went rigid. "I had no idea you were so handsome under all that hair. Was there something you needed, Ansel?" I gestured to the room at large, sweeping an arm past Coco's impressive bosom. "Or are you just here to admire the general decor?" He cleared his throat, eyes gleaming determinedly as he opened his mouth once more. "Captain Diggory requested I escort you to the castle. The Archbishop insisted he go on with him. I can also escort you, Mademoiselle Perrault."
"I think I'd like that." Coco slid an arm around his, and I burst out laughing at the alarmed look on his face. Every single muscle in his body tensed, even his eyelids. It was extraordinary. "And please, call me Bree." He took great care to touch as little of Coco as possible as we walked down the stairwell, but Coco went out of her way to make the endeavor difficult. The chasseurs who had been forced to stay behind stared unabashedly as we passed. Coco winked at them. "Might as well give them a show," I whispered. Coco grinned wickedly and pinched Ansel's backside in response. He yelped and leapt forward, whirling mutinously as the guards snickered behind us.
"That wasn't funny."
I disagreed. Ancient and unadorned, the castle of Césarine was a fortress befitting its city. It boasted no intricate buttresses or spires, no windows or arches. It loomed over us as we joined the throng of carriages already in the receiving line, the setting sun tinging the stone with bloody red light. The evergreens in the courtyard, tall and narrow, like two spears piercing the sky, only added to the grim picture. We waited for what seemed like hours before a footman in Lyon livery approached our carriage. Ansel stepped out to greet him, whispering something in his ear, and the man's eyes widened. He hastily took my hand.
"Madame Diggory, Captain Diggory has been anxiously awaiting your arrival."
"As he should be."
Coco didn't wait for the footman to help her down. Ansel scrambled to catch her elbow, but she brushed him off too. "I'm anxious to see if this chasseur of yours is as doting in public as he is in private." The footman looked startled, but said nothing. Ansel groaned under his breath.
"Please, mesdames, make your way to the antechamber," the footman said. "The herald will ensure you are properly announced."
I lurched to a halt. "Properly announced? But I have no title."
"Yes, madame, but your husband is the guest of honor. The king insists on treating him as royalty tonight."
"Potentially problematic," Coco murmured, as Ansel tugged the two of us forward. Definitely problematic, and not the fun kind. I had no intention of being announced to a room full of strangers. There was no telling who could be in there watching. I'd learned my lesson with Estelle. There was no need for a repeat performance. I took in my surroundings, seeking a discreet entrance. At a ball held in my husband's honor, however, I had no idea how I might remain discreet, especially in such a ridiculously sheer dress. I cursed inwardly as every eye turned toward us as we passed. Coco's sinful figure didn't help matters. Richly dressed aristocrats milled about the antechamber, which was as dark and dismal as the exterior, like a prison. A prison with candles flickering in gold candelabras and wreaths of evergreen and holly draped across the doorways. I think I even spotted mistletoe. Ansel craned his neck to find the herald.
"There he is."
He pointed to a short, squat man with a wig and scroll who stood beside a large archway. Music and laughter poured from the room beyond. Another servant appeared to take our cloaks. Though I held on to mine for a second too long, the servant succeeded in tugging it from my hands. Feeling naked, I watched it disappear with a sense of helplessness. When Ansel pulled me toward the herald, however, I dug in my heels.
"I'm not being announced." "But the footman said..."
I jerked out of his grasp. I don't care what the footman said. Lou, the king insisted, darlings. Coco smiled wide, looping her arms through ours. Let's not make a scene, hmm? Taking a deep breath, I forced myself to smile and nod at the eavesdropping aristocrats. I'll be entering from over there, I informed Ansel through clenched teeth, gesturing across the antechamber to where servants were coming and going from a smaller, secondary set of doors. Lou, he began, but I was already halfway to the doors. Coco hurried to follow, leaving Ansel behind. The ballroom was much larger and grander than the antechamber. Iron chandeliers hung from the beamed ceiling, and the wooden floor gleamed in the candlelight. Musicians played a festive tune in the corner next to an enormous evergreen. Some guests already danced, though most preferred to stroll around the perimeter of the room, drinking champagne and wheedling the royal family. Judging from the loud, slurred voices of the aristocrats nearest me, they'd been hitting the bubbly for hours. Yes, ye old sisters, that's what I heard. They've traveled all the way from Amandine to perform. My cousin says they're quite brilliant. Sunday, you said. After Mass, such a fitting way to end the weekend. The Archbishop deserves the honor. Scoffing, I marched past them into the room. Any person who chose to string together the words, "The Archbishop deserves the honor," wasn't worth my attention. I scanned the sea of blue coats and sparkling gowns for Reed, spotting his coppery hair at the far end of the ballroom. A group of admirers surrounded him, though the young woman clinging to his arm drew my particular attention. My heart plummeted. Anxiously awaiting my ass. Even from a distance, I could tell the woman was beautiful, delicate and feminine. Her porcelain skin and raven hair shone in the candlelight. She shook with genuine laughter at something Reed had just said. Uneasiness flitted through me. This could only be one person. One boring, docile, wretchedly inconvenient pipe dream. Coco followed my gaze, wrinkling her nose in distaste when she too spotted Reed and the raven-haired beauty. Please tell me that's not who I think it is. I'll come find you later. My eyes never left Reed's face. Coco knew better than to follow this time. I'd just descended into the ballroom when another man stepped in my path. Though I'd never encountered him this close, I recognized his tawny complexion and hooded eyes at once. Black hair styled to perfection, he wore more diamonds on his crown than were in Tremblay's entire vault. Beauregard Lyon. Damn it, I didn't have time for this shit. Even now, that stupid cow was probably sinking her claws deeper into my husband, reminding him of her beautiful lips and smile and eyes and laugh.
That is quite the dress.
His gaze swept up my body lazily, and he smirked, arching a brow. Your Highness? I dropped into a curtsy, clamping down on a slew of more appropriate honorifics. He eyed my breasts appreciatively as I leaned down, and I straightened at once. Bloody pervert.
Your name?
It wasn't a question. Madame Diggory, Your Highness. His grin widened in delight.
Madame Diggory? As in Madame Reed Diggory?
The very same. He actually threw his head back and laughed. The aristocrats nearest us paused, eyeing me with renewed interest.
Oh, I've heard all about you.
His golden eyes sparkled with glee.
Tell me, how exactly did you trick our dear captain into marrying you? I've heard the rumors, of course, but everyone has their own theories.
I would have gladly broken a finger to break one of his other appendages. No tricks, Your Highness, I said sweetly. We're in love. His grin faded and his lip curled slightly.
How wretched.
At that moment, the crowd shifted, revealing Reed and his many admirers. The raven-haired woman reached up to brush something from Reed's hair. My blood boiled.
The prince's brows rose as he followed my gaze.
Love, huh?
He leaned closer, his breath warm against my ear.
Should we make him jealous?
No, thank you, I snapped. Your Highness.
Call me Beau.
His grin turned wicked as he stepped aside. I stormed past him, but he caught my hand and brushed a kiss against my palm at the last second. I resisted the urge to snap his fingers.
Come find me if you change your mind. We would have fun together, you and I.
With one last lingering look, he sauntered off, winking at one of the women who hovered nearby. I scowled after him for a moment, before turning back to read. But he and Seeley were gone. A Dangerous Game, Lou. It didn't take long for me to spot them as Reed towered over everyone in the crowd. Canas that he was, Seeley still clutched his arm as they headed toward a door partially hidden by two evergreens. I trailed after them. To my annoyance, and perhaps trepidation, they remained completely absorbed in each other, walking through the door without a backward glance. I made to slip through after them, but a hand caught my arm. I whirled around to face the Archbishop.
I wouldn't.
He dropped my arm as if worried he'd catch something.
Envy is a mortal sin, child.
So is adultery.
He ignored me, his gaze falling on the door. His face was paler than usual, drawn, and he looked like he'd lost weight since I last saw him.
We stole a future from him, you and I. Seeley is everything a woman should be. Reed would have been happy.
He looked back at me, and his mouth tightened.
Now he pays for both our sins.
What are you talking about?
I don't blame you for your hedonistic upbringing, Louise. But you are a heathen.
His eyes shone fervid with conviction.
Perhaps if someone had been there, if someone had intervened, all of this could have been avoided.
I stood motionless, rooted to the spot like the evergreens beside us, as he began to pace.
Now it's too late. Let Reed enjoy this small pleasure away from your corruption.
My bewilderment hardened into something glittering and cold at the words, as if I were the one who had done the corrupting, as if I were the one who should be ashamed. I lifted my chin, stepping forward until I was offensively close to his pale face.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but you need to look in the mirror.
There's a special circle in hell for liars and hypocrites, Your Eminence. Perhaps I'll see you there. He gaped at me, but when I turned on my heel, he made no move to follow. The savage satisfaction coursing through me quickly dissipated as I entered what could only be a kitchen. It was empty. An icy breeze soon bit at my skin, however, and I realized the opposite door had been left ajar. The wind whistled through the narrow crack. I inched it open farther to see Reed and Seeley standing in a dead herbal garden. Snow coated the brown bits of sage and rosemary. I leaned forward, barely able to discern their voices over the wind.
I'm sorry, Seeley.
Reed cradled the woman's hands in his own. She held her shoulders stiff, angry.
You shouldn't be here. The small, disapproving voice at the back of my head warned. This is wrong. Private. You're breaking trust.
He's the one breaking trust.
There has to be something we can do, Seeley said bitterly. It isn't right. The Archbishop knows you're innocent. We could go to him, ask him for an annulment. He loves you as if you're his own son. Surely he wouldn't keep you trapped in a loveless marriage.
My stomach dropped to somewhere below my ankles. Reed stroked her fingers with his thumb.
The Archbishop is the one who suggested it.
The King, then. My father is the Vicomte. I'm sure I could arrange a meeting.
Seeley, he said softly.
She sniffled, and I knew instinctively it wasn't because of the cold. I hate her.
Celie, you didn't want me.
My chest constricted at the emotion in his voice, at the pain. I always wanted you, she said fiercely. This wasn't supposed to happen. I was angry, heartbroken, and I needed time. I wanted to be selfless for her, for Pip. She wrapped her arms around his neck, and I saw her face clearly for the first time. She had lovely, high cheekbones, with wide, doe-like eyes and full lips. But I don't care anymore, Reed. I don't care if it's selfish. I want to be with you. Surely there is nothing more beautiful in all the world than your smile. Except, of course, your eyes, or your laugh, or your lips. I watched her press those lips to Reed's cheek and felt sick. Suddenly, I didn't find their love letters funny anymore. He pulled away before she could move to his mouth.
Celie, don't. Please, don't make this any harder.
She paused, lower lip trembling. Her next words were a direct blow to my chest. I love you, Reed. She clung to him, pleading. I'm so sorry I pushed you away, but we can still be together. We can fix this. You haven't consummated the marriage. Speak to the Archbishop. Ask for an annulment. He'll send that whore to prison where she belongs, and
she isn't a whore.
I leaned forward as Celie pulled back, frowning at something she saw in his face. She was a thief, Reed, and she framed you. She doesn't deserve you. Reed gently disentangled himself from her arms.
Celie, this can't continue.
His voice was low, resigned.
Whether or not you like her, I made a vow. I will honor it.
Do you like her? Celie demanded, eyes narrowing.
It doesn't matter.
It matters to me.
And me. What do you want me to say, Celie? She's my wife. Of course I like her.
Celie rocked back as if he'd slapped her. What's happened to you, Reed?
Nothing.
The Reed I know would abhor that woman. She is everything you stand against.
You don't know her.
I obviously don't know you either.
Celie, please.
Do you love her? I held my breath, fingers biting into the door jamb. There was a heavy pause, then...
No.
He exhaled heavily, looking down.
But I think maybe I could.
But you said you loved me. She backed away slowly, eyes wide with shock and hurt. Tears slid down her cheeks. You asked to marry me. Me, not her.
Celie, I did, but Lou...
He sighed and shook his head.
I won't hurt her.
You won't hurt her? She cried in earnest now, patches of color rising to her pale cheeks. What about me, Reed? We've known each other since we were children. Her tears soaked her bodice, ruining the black silk. What about Pip? What about your oath? Reed's hands hung limp at his sides.
I'm sorry. I never meant for this to happen.
I'm sorry too, Reed, she sobbed. I'm sorry I ever met you. I inched away from the door, numbness creeping down my limbs. I shouldn't have been here. This moment hadn't been meant for my eyes. Back in the ballroom, I stood apart from the crowd, my mind still reeling. Reed had loved her. I shook my head, disgusted with myself. Of course he had. He'd said as much in his stupid journal, which I never should have read. And even if he hadn't, he was a young, attractive man. He would have had his choice amongst any number of women if he hadn't devoted his life to the chasseurs. The thought rankled more than it should have. As did the thought of Celie's lips, of anyone's lips, pressed to his cheek. Celie reemerged several moments later, wiping her face as inconspicuously as possible. She ducked her head before anyone could question her, heading straight for the antechamber. I swallowed the lump in my throat as Reed too reappeared. Watching as he searched for me, I debated following Seeley. How could I face him after what I'd heard, after learning what he'd given up? Do you love her? No, but I think maybe I could. Could what? Love me? Panic clawed up my throat at the word. Just as I'd lifted my skirts to flee toward the carriage, however, Reed spotted me in the crowd. I waved awkwardly, cursing my sudden insecurity, as his blue eyes met mine and widened. He started forward, politely excusing himself from the many aristocrats who'd tried to stop and congratulate him along the way. I shifted my feet, intensely and horribly aware of my thunderous heartbeat, my tingling limbs, my flushed skin, when he finally reached me. He took my hand.
You look beautiful.
I flushed further under his gaze. Unlike the prince's haughty appreciation, Reed was almost reverent. No one had ever looked at me like that before. Thank you. My breath caught, and he tilted his head, eyes searching mine in silent question. I looked away, embarrassed, but Coco chose that moment to swoop down on us. She didn't bother with pleasantries. She never did with Reed.
Tell me, Chasseur Diggory, who was that lovely woman you were with earlier? Your sister, perhaps?
I glared at her pointedly, but she ignored me. Subtlety had never been Coco's forte.
No, Reed said. That was the Vicomte's daughter, Mademoiselle Tremblay.
Close personal friend, Coco pressed. Her dad is friends with your dad type of thing?
I've never met my father, Reed answered woodenly.
But Coco didn't bat an eye.
How do you know one another then, Bree?
I forced a smile and reached for her hand, squeezing it mercilessly.
I think I'd like a little time alone with my husband. Where's Ansel?
She waved her other hand behind us dispassionately.
Probably beating his chest and challenging that other chasseur to a duel.
I looked back to where she waved.
What other chasseur? The pompous one, the asshat.
She pursed her lips in concentration, but she needn't have bothered. I knew exactly to whom she referred. Jean-Luc.
What happened?
Oh, the usual male condition. Ansel didn't want Jean-Luc playing with his new toy.
She rolled her eyes.
I swear, my female paramours are never so much trouble.
My grin was genuine now. Poor Ansel. He didn't stand a chance against Jean-Luc or Coco.
Perhaps you should go, referee.
Coco studied my hand clasped around Reed's and the feverish complexion of my cheeks, the way he stood close, much too close. Her eyes narrowed.
Perhaps I should.
She stepped forward to embrace me, but Reed wouldn't let go of my hand. Shooting him a glare, she hugged me regardless, awkward but fierce.
I'll see you later, she murmured in my ear. Let me know if I need to exsanguinate him.
Reed watched her leave with an inscrutable expression.
We need to talk, he said finally. Somewhere private.
I followed him in silent apprehension to the same herb garden of Seeley's heartbreak. This time I made sure to shut the kitchen door firmly behind us. Whatever he wanted to confess, and I had an inkling it would hurt like a bitch, I didn't need an audience. He dragged a hand through his coppery hair in agitation.
Lou, the woman you and Mademoiselle Perrault saw me with, that was...
Don't. I wrapped my arms around my waist to keep from shivering. I couldn't take it. I couldn't relive the wretched conversation again. Hearing it once had been enough.
You don't have to explain anything. I understand.
I do need to explain, he disagreed. Look, I know we were married under less than ideal circumstances, but Lou, I want this to work. I want to be your husband. I know I can't force you to want the same, but...
I do want the same, I whispered. His eyes widened and he took a tentative step closer.
You do?
Yes. He smiled then, truly smiled, before faltering slightly.
Then there can't be any secrets between us.
He hesitated, as if searching for the right words.
The woman you saw was Celie. You read my letter, so you know I loved her, but nothing happened, I promise. She found me when I arrived with the Archbishop, and she refused to leave my side. I brought her out here just a few moments ago to explain the new parameters of our relationship. I told her I didn't-
I know. I took a deep breath, preparing myself for the unpleasantness to come. He frowned.
How can you know that?
Because I'm a shit person. Because I didn't trust you. Because she is everything you deserve and I am your enemy. I followed the two of you out here, I admitted quietly. I heard everything.
You spied on us.
Disbelief colored his voice. I trembled, whether from the cold or shame, I didn't know. Old habits die hard. His brows pinched together, and he drew back slightly.
That's not how I would have chosen for you to find out.
I shrugged, attempting a bit of my old swagger, but it fell flat. Easier this way, though. He stared at me for a long moment, so long I didn't know whether he would speak at all. I recoiled from his intensity.
No more secrets, Lou, he said finally. No more lies.
I cursed myself for not being able to give him the answer he wanted, the answer I wanted. Because there it was, leering at me. I didn't want to lie to him anymore. I'll try, I whispered. It was the best I could give him. He nodded, slow and understanding.
Let's go back inside. You're shivering.
Wait. I grabbed his hand before he could turn, my heart lodged firmly in my throat. I want to
make a complete and total fool of myself.
I shook my head, cursing silently. I was no good at this. Honesty, sincerity, both were too troublesome to bother with usually. But now, with Reed, I owed him both. I want to thank you for everything. I squeezed his fingers, my own stiff and aching from the cold. Celie was right. I don't deserve you. I made a real mess of your life when I came into it. His other hand came down on top of mine, warm and steady. To my surprise, he smiled.
I'm glad you did.
Blood crept into my frozen cheeks, and I suddenly found it difficult to look at him. Right, well then, let's go back inside. I'm freezing my ass off out here. The celebration still raged when we returned to the ballroom. I grabbed a flute of champagne from a passing servant and downed it in one swallow. Reed eyed me incredulously.
You drink like a man.
Maybe men can learn a thing or two from women. I waved the servant back and grabbed two more flutes, passing one to Reed. He didn't take it. Relax, Shas. Indulge. This is the best champagne money can buy. It's an insult to His Majesty not to drink it. I scanned the crowd with feigned boredom. Where is King Auguste, anyway? He's supposed to be here, isn't he?
He is. He introduced me earlier.
What was he like?
About as you'd expect.
So a smarmy bastard like his son? I waved the flute of champagne under his nose, but he merely shook his head. I shrugged, downing his glass too and chuckling at his expression. After a few moments, delicious warmth spread through my body. The music, previously a slow, insipid waltz, sounded much better now, livelier. I downed the third glass. Dance with me, I said abruptly. Reed looked at me in bewilderment.
What?
Dance with me. I stood on my tiptoes and threw my arms around his neck. He tensed, glancing around, but I tugged him down determinedly. He complied, stooping slightly, and wrapped his arms around my waist. I laughed. We looked ridiculous, all bent and straining to fit together, but I refused to let him go.
This isn't the proper way to dance.
I lifted my chin and looked him directly in the eyes. Of course it is. You're the guest of honor. You can dance any way you want.
I don't usually do this.
Reed, if you don't dance with me, I'll go and find someone who will. His grip tightened on my hips.
No, you won't.
Then the way forward is clear. We dance. He blew out a breath and closed his eyes.
Fine.
As nervous as he'd been to dance, he proved himself capable within moments, moving with unnatural grace for someone so tall. I myself stumbled more than once. I would have blamed the train of my stupid dress, but really it was just me. I couldn't concentrate. His hands were strong on my waist, and I couldn't help but imagine them elsewhere. My blood heated at the thought. The song ended far too soon.
We should go, he said, voice rough. It's getting late.
I nodded and stepped away from him, not trusting myself to speak. It didn't take much time to find Coco. She leaned against the wall near the antechamber, chatting with none other than Beauregard Lyon. He had an arm braced against the wall above her head. Even from a distance, I could see they were flirting shamelessly. Both their gazes flicked to me as Reed and I approached.
Well, 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 if it isn't Madame Diggory.
The prince's eyes glittered with amusement.
I see your husband made the right choice.
I ignored him, though Reed bristled at his words. Bree, we're ready to go. Are you coming? Coco looked at the prince, who smirked.
This lovely creature will not be leaving my side for the remainder of the evening. Sorry, darling, he whispered to me conspiratorially. I'll need to postpone that offer, unless you or your husband would care to join.
I glared at him. Ass. Reed's eyes narrowed.
What offer?
I tugged on his arm. Let's go find Ansel. He already left. Coco wrapped her arms around the prince's waist. A wicked gleam lit her dark eyes. And just the two of you on the ride home. I hope you don't mind. I bared my teeth in an attempt at a smile. Can I talk to you in private for a moment, Bree? Surprise flashed across her features, but she quickly recovered. Of course. Smile slipping, I dragged her into the antechamber. What are you doing? She shimmied her hips. Trying to get you some alone time with your husband. The dance floor didn't look like it was cutting it.
I meant with the prince.
Oh. She arched a brow and grinned. Probably the same thing you'll be doing with Reed.
Are you insane? He'll see your scars.
She raised a shoulder in indifference, tugging at her tight black sleeve. So I'll tell him I was in an accident. Why would he suspect anything else? It's not like the Dame Rouge or common knowledge, and everyone here thinks I'm Bree Perrault, a healer and close friend of Captain Reed Diggory. Besides, aren't you being a bit hypocritical? Beau and I are just sex, but you and Reed, I won't claim to know what the hell is going on with you two, but something is going on. I scoffed, but my face flushed treacherously.
You really are insane.
Am I? Coco took my hands, eyes searching my face. I don't want to tell you your business, Lou, but please, be careful. You're playing a dangerous game. Reed is still a chasseur, and you're still a witch. You know you'll have to part ways eventually. I don't want to see you get hurt. My anger evaporated at her concern, and I squeezed her hands in reassurance.
I know what I'm doing, Coco.
But even I knew that was a lie. I had no idea what I was doing when it came to Reed. She dropped my hands, frowning. Right.
I'll just leave you alone then, and the two of you can continue this stupidity together.
My stomach sank inexplicably as I watched her go. I didn't like fighting with Coco, but there was nothing I could do to fix it this time.
Reed appeared by my side a moment later, taking my arm and leading me to the carriage that was suddenly too small, too warm, with Reed sitting beside me. His fingers brushed my thigh in a seemingly innocent gesture, and I couldn't help but remember the feel of them on my waist. I shuddered and closed my eyes. When I opened them a moment later, Reed was staring at me. I swallowed, and his gaze felt my lips. I willed him to lean forward, to bridge the distance between us. But his eyes shuttered at the last second, and he pulled away. Disappointment crashed through me, replaced quickly by the sharp sting of humiliation. It's for the best. I glared out the window. Coco had been right. Reed was still a chasseur, and I was still a witch. No matter what happened between us, no matter what changed, this one insurmountable obstacle would remain. And yet, I studied his rigid profile, the way his eyes kept gravitating back to me. It would be stupid to start down this path. There was only one way it could end. That knowledge did nothing to stop my heart from racing at his proximity, however, nor dim my spark of hope. Hope that perhaps our story could end a different way. But Coco had been right. I was playing a dangerous game.
A Question of Pride. Reed. The tension in our room that night was physically painful. Lou lay in my bed. I heard her shift in the darkness, her breathing loud and then quiet. She shifted again, rolled slowly to her side, her back, her side, her back, trying to stay silent, inconspicuous. But she was neither. And I heard her, over and over and over again. The woman was driving me mad. Finally, she leaned over the side of the bed, blue-green eyes meeting mine in the darkness. Her hair spilled to the floor. I sat up on my elbows too quickly, and her eyes dropped to where my nightshirt gaped open across my chest. Heat rushed to my stomach.
"What is it?"
"This is stupid," she scowled. But I was at a loss for why she was irritated. "You don't have to sleep on the floor." I eyed her suspiciously.
"Are you sure?"
"Okay, first of all, stop looking at me like that. It's not a big deal." She rolled her eyes before scooting to make room for me. "Besides, it's freezing in here. I need your big-ass body heat to keep warm." When I still didn't move, she patted the spot beside her coaxingly. "Oh, come on, Chas, I don't bite much." I swallowed hard, violently blocking out the image of her mouth on my skin. With slow, cautious movements, giving her every chance to change her mind, I climbed onto the bed. Several seconds of awkward silence passed.
"Relax,"
she finally whispered, though she too lay stiff as a board.
"Quit being awkward."
I almost laughed, almost, as if I could have possibly relaxed with her so close. The bed, standard issue in the dormitories, hadn't been built for two. Half of my body jutted out into empty space, the other half pressed into her. I didn't complain. After another moment of torturous silence, she turned toward me, her breasts brushing my arm. My pulse spiked, and I gritted my teeth, reining in my rampant thoughts.
"Tell me about your parents."
Just like that, all thoughts of intimacy fled. "There's nothing to tell."
"There's always something to tell."
I stared resolutely at the ceiling. Silence descended once more, but she continued to watch me. I couldn't resist glancing over at her eager, wide-eyed expression. I shook my head and sighed. I was abandoned. A maid found me in the garbage when I was a baby. She stared at me, horrified. The Archbishop took me in. I was a page boy for a long time. Then I had a growth spurt. The side of my mouth quirked up of its own volition. He began training me for the chasseurs not long after. I claimed my spot when I was 16. It's all I've ever known.
She rested her head on my shoulder. Claimed your spot? Closing my eyes, I rested my chin on top of her head and inhaled deeply.
There are only 100 balisardos, one drop of St. Constantine's relic in each. It limits the positions available. Most serve for life. When a chasseur retires or dies, a tournament is held. Only the winner may join our ranks.
Wait, she sat up, and my eyes snapped open. She grinned down at me, her hair tickling my chest. Are you telling me Ansel beat out all the other contenders?
Ansel isn't a chasseur.
Her grin faltered.
He's not? No, he's training to be, though. He'll compete in the next tournament, along with the other initiates.
Oh. She frowned now, twirling a lock of hair around her finger. Well, that explains a lot.
It does.
She nestled back into me with a sigh. Ansel is different than everyone else here. He's tolerant, open-minded.
I bristled at the insinuation. It's not a crime to have principles, Lou.
She ignored me. Her fingers traced the collar of my shirt. Tell me about your tournament.
I cleared my throat, struggling to ignore the gentle movement, but her fingers were very warm, and my shirt was very thin. I was probably Ansel's age, I chuckled at the memory, at how my knees had trembled, how I'd vomited down my coat minutes before the first round. The Archbishop had been forced to procure me another. Though it had only been a few years ago, the memory felt very far away. A different time, a different life. When I'd lived and breathed to secure a future within my patriarch's world. Everyone else was bigger than me. Stronger, too.
I don't know how I did it.
Yes, you do.
You're right.
Another laugh rose to my throat, unbidden. I do. They weren't that much bigger, and I practiced every day to grow stronger. The Archbishop trained me himself. Nothing mattered but becoming a chasseur. My smile faded as the memories resurfaced one after another, with painful clarity. The crowd, the shouts, the clang of steel and tang of sweat in the air, and Celie, her cheers.
I battled Jean-Luc in the championship.
And you beat him?
Yes.
He resents you for it.
I know. It made beating him even sweeter.
She poked me in the stomach. You're an ass!
Probably, but he's worse. Things changed between us that year. He was still an initiate when the Archbishop promoted me to captain. He had to wait until the next tournament to win his spot. I don't think he ever forgave me.
She didn't speak again for several moments. When she finally did, I wished she hadn't. And Celie? Did you continue seeing her after your vows?
All remnants of humor withered and died on my tongue. I stared at the ceiling once more. Though she said nothing, her fingers resumed tracing my collar. Coaxing. Waiting. I sighed again.
You saw the letters. We maintained our courtship.
Why?
I stiffened, immediately wary. What do you mean, why?
Why continue your courtship after you swore yourself to the chasseurs? I've never heard of a chasseur marrying before you. There are no other wives in the tower.
I would have given my balisarda to end this conversation. How much had she heard of my conversation with Celie? Did she... I swallowed hard. Did she know Celie had rejected me?
It's not unheard of. Just a few years ago, Captain Barre married.
I didn't mention that he'd left our brotherhood a year later. She sat up, fixing me with those unnerving eyes.
You were going to marry Celie?
Yes. I tore my gaze away, back toward the ceiling. A snowflake drifted in from the window.
Growing up,
Celia and I were sweethearts. Her kindness appealed to me. I was an angry child. She tempered me, begged me not to throw rocks at the constabulary, forced me to confess when I stole the communion wine. A grin tugged at my lips at the memory. I had a chip on my shoulder. The Archbishop had to beat it out. Her eyes narrowed at my words, but she wisely said nothing. Lowering herself back against my chest, she brushed her finger against my bare collarbone. Heat erupted across my skin and everywhere else in its wake. I shifted my hips away, cursing silently.
How many witches have you killed?
I groaned and turned my head into the pillow. The woman could freeze hell over. 3.
Really?
The judgment in her voice rankled. I nodded, trying not to seem affronted. Though it's difficult to catch a witch, they're vulnerable without their magic. Still, the witch at the theater was cleverer than most. It didn't attack me with magic, it used magic to attack me. There's a difference. She trailed her finger down my arm, idly. I resisted a shudder.
Do you know about magic, then?
Clearing my throat, I forced myself to focus on the conversation, on her words, not her touch.
We know what the